Record on this computer.
All right, Sharon, you are over on the Polish side of the border right now, but you live in Ternopil, right?
That is correct, yes.
But you don't have a classic Slavic accent. So does your husband? Explain how this happens, about your family.
Well, we are a typical marriage made in YWAM. So I did my DTS back in 1996, and our outreach came to Ukraine, and the interpreter that had been sent to meet our team and to take us to his hometown of Lutsk is the man that I have now been married to for almost 21 years. So he actually came to the Lord through a Crossroads outreach in 1994. And then he would translate for all the teams that came in previous years.
Terrific.
So what's his name? His name is Ruslan.
Ruslan.
Ruslan Baradin. And we married in 2001 and helped pioneer the base actually in Simferopol, Crimea in 2003. And then have, since the invasion and occupation of Crimea, we have found ourselves repositioned to Ternopil for the last 8 years.
Well, tell me a little bit about that time with Russia taking over Crimea and the rest of the world saying, don't do that. Oh, we're sorry you did that. that was about all. Did it feel that way to you?
No, not at all. It was, up until that moment, it was the greatest tragedy of our lives, because in a day we lost our community, we lost all the momentum of the ministry that we had been building there. And ultimately we lost our home. It was, even 8 years later, it's still hard to find the words to express what that was like, but it was, you know, like what you see in the movies. We woke up, first reports coming in that the parliament building that was just six blocks from our house had been taken by unmarked special operations soldiers. And so my husband had put me and our two daughters, who were then 6 and 8, on the train heading to Ternopil.
Yeah.
And so our train was the last train to leave. And after our train left, the whole peninsula was locked down by what we now know to have been Russian soldiers. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and now it's happening again, huh?
It's happening again.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how did you feel at that time, you and your husband, about the response of Western nations? And as a committed Christian, what are your thought processes? Do you have conflicting thoughts about what the West should do as a Christian, and love your enemies and all that? What were you thinking then, and is it the same you're thinking now?
Yeah. You know, our situation was very interesting. So my husband is from Western Ukraine, but he was raised in a Russian-speaking family. Okay. So our family is Russian-speaking, but we also have, I'm from the United States, was born and raised in Washington State, Northern Idaho. So in 2014, when when suddenly everybody was watching our area on the front page of all the newspapers and on all the television sets, we were looking at news coming out of Russia, coming out of Ukraine, coming out of Europe, coming out of America. And all these years later, the one thing that really sticks out into my mind is what wasn't covered in the worldwide news agencies. And, Russia tried to make everything look like it was very legal. They had this election where they reported that 99% of the population voted for Crimea to become part of Russia. And the reality was that on the ballot, there were two choices: to become their own separate, breakaway location, or to become part of the Federation of Russia. There was no option to stay as part of Ukraine. So that part of the population didn't even come to vote. And so, of course, this was not reported in the news, and it was reported that 99% of the population was for being annexed by Russia.
Yeah. Even the Western press said that, didn't they? So went around the world.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And the reality was this was horrible. It tore up families. It was very politicized. So even in our home churches, you had the Russians versus the Ukrainians in terms of how they saw the situation politically. You had families who were excited about, becoming part of Russia, and you had families that just thought it was the most evil, awful thing. And And we saw churches split up over this. We saw families split up over this. And so much propaganda. We ended up going to Ternopil. And in those days, the propaganda was saying that Western Ukraine was full of Nazis and these Bandera people. And, you know, if you spoke Russian there, they'd beat you up. And of course, when we arrived as some of the first displaced people from the conflict in Crimea, we were, and I speak Russian. I didn't speak any Ukrainian at that time. We were welcomed. The house, our neighbors of the house we rented, as soon as they found out we were from Crimea, they brought us, you know, eggs from their chickens, canned preserves. I mean, they just adopted us, loved us, helped us settle in.
Isn't that terrific? How different are the two languages?
I tell people it's a little bit like Spanish and Portuguese.
Yeah.
So, so many words are exactly the same. The grammar is similar, but then there are words that are completely different.
So. Right. Right. So you've been on a learning curve, and I guess that curve is behind you now, and you've got pretty good Ukrainian and good Russian.
Yes.
Do you still speak Russian at home?
We do. And I would say the language, the dominant language for our family is Russian. I understand Ukrainian now conversationally, and I can, you know, I throw in some Ukrainian words in my sentence structure, but you know, in Russian, I am fluent. My Ukrainian is like preschool level if I try to speak
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Are enough people speak Ukraine or Russian there that you get on okay with Russian and English?
Well, the reality is that the vast majority of the refugees that are coming in from Ukraine, they are all from the Russian-speaking parts of Ukraine.
Right.
So the dominant language that is needed here is actually Russian. And it's also a great irony of this awful war is that Russia has attacked the part of Ukraine that was very pro-Russia. Attacked the part of Ukraine that politically felt closer, you know, culturally and otherwise to Russia. And so in many ways, you know, Russia succeeded in alienating even more of the people of Ukraine that might have felt closer to the Russian culture and politics.
And do you think that is will hold true? Do you think this is pretty much determined or created determination in the minds of the people in the East that they will not be absorbed into Russia?
Oh, yes, I think so. Yeah. I mean, you're always, you know, there is a battle. This, you know, there is an enemy, and the enemy has flesh and blood, and the enemy is in the spiritual realm and is definitely is working through propaganda and just keeping people blind. And I know people, that is true about here in Ukraine as well as in Russia, but Russia has come ruthlessly, and Russia has come with no respect of child, woman, grandmother, grandfather. And people have lost everything that you could lose that was precious to them in a horrible way.
Yeah.
And so in doing that, Russia has become the enemy. And so that is devastating no matter what you felt, but I think it's especially devastating if your cultural identity felt closer to the Russian people. So it is very heartbreaking.
In the report that I reported to a lot of people this morning, the one that comes out from Al Akimov via Lorna Darling's office, they quoted a grandmother saying, "I was here when the Germans came and they gave sweets and were kind to the children. And the Russians came and they killed the children and the mothers." And that sort of thing, that sort of behavior creates a determination that lasts for many, many generations.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a shame that there could have been so much peaceful cooperation between the two. I want to make a point here. You've talked about propaganda several times, and I think something's happened in the U.S. and in the U.K. recently where there's been a reaction against the control of information by big companies and by collusion between big companies and government, between big tech, big pharma, you know, and the social media platforms and the left-leaning part of the government. Because a few people started thinking, wait a minute, we are being led astray here. And not that the conservative people wouldn't do exactly the same thing in the same position. But I think the story you're telling illustrates the importance of us standing up for a press that is not just free, but independent political agendas, because with the capture of the press in the in Russia, referred to the USSR at times, but with the capture of the press, it would seem when we hear reports and we see interviews with people that a lot of people in Russia do think that they are cleansing the Ukraine of Nazis.
Yes.
So what's your take on that? Where does that come from? Is there any little kernel of truth to the idea that some Nazism is some Nazi sympathies are thriving in the Ukraine?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I want to say that what Russia has chosen to do in this horrific and awful war in Ukraine and the genocide, we are hearing this word, murdering innocent people. Yeah. There is no justification for that, no matter how righteous or unrighteous, the country of Ukraine is. There's nothing that could ever justify what is happening here. And people try to look for a reason to justify it. Well, maybe, there's something happening in Ukraine that just needed to be taken care of. This is not that. Horrific, awful genocide, intentional murdering of the people of Ukraine and devastation of their country. Having said that, absolutely, there is no Nazi, I hear that word and I just think how ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is there racism in Ukraine? Yes, there is racism in Ukraine, like there is racism in every single other country in this world.
Yeah.
Is there some sort of Nazi movement coming about? Well, I've lived in Ukraine for over 25 years and I have not experienced that a single time. Is there evil in Ukraine? Yes, there is. There's things that I wish were different here. Ukraine is not a very diverse country. And so we have many medical students from Africa and India and Southeast Asia that come. And I wish that they were treated better.
Yeah.
But I think it's just, it's just Ukraine learning how to accept peoples from different places how to welcome different cultures. But is there a Nazi movement here? Absolutely not.
No,
not at all.
That's where the gospel is so important, isn't it? That message of loving one another. You notice there are no racial qualifications to that. It doesn't say love people who look like you. It says love one another. The one thing that sets apart the gospel from everything, every other religion, everything that's shared as a faith setting on the earth is love your enemies. Yeah, now that's hard to do, huh? Love your enemies. How are you doing?
I lost the sound here.
Okay. I can hear you. No?
I lost the sound.
Oh, I don't know why. Let's see.
A second here.
Okay.
Oh, now we're back.
Okay. All right. Okay. The thing that sets apart the message of Jesus is love your enemies. And so... Mm-hmm. How are you doing? How's the church doing? It's the most demanding of all commandments, I think, except to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so glad you asked me that question. I am called to the Slavic world and I love the Russian people. I love the Russian people as much as I love the Ukrainian people. And I have had a hard time since day one with making sure that when I'm speaking about the enemy, that I'm not speaking about Russian language, Russian culture, or Russian people, because I love them. Yeah. And I do with all my heart believe that not the entire population of the Russian people are for this war. I think there are many of them that are heartbroken from this war. And I wish we could hear their voices louder.
Yeah, I truly do.
We need to hear their voices louder. But yes, there is an enemy, and the enemy has accomplished a great, great wound between the very close related peoples of Ukraine and Russia, and it will take an act of God to heal that wound. I cannot imagine what it will be like walking through the process of forgiveness and pain. Every family in Ukraine has relatives or friends in Russia, and every family in Russia has relatives and friends in Ukraine. And yet something has happened in Russia. And again, it's back to this propaganda. It's back to recognizing that the enemy has done something in blinding people. But I have many stories of close personal friends, Russians who are working or serving in Ukraine, who've witnessed what has happened, and they've called home to their moms and their brothers and sisters and said, this is what has happened, mom. And the answer has been, well, that's not what they're showing on the news.
Yeah.
That's not what they're saying here. And what happens when your own child calls you home and tells you firsthand what they've experienced, and your own mother, your own father, your own siblings don't believe you?
Yeah.
So that is not a normal reaction. And I think this is, again, where we need to pray that minds would be open, you know, the eyes would be open, that minds would see the truth. Because we know that truth will set us free, right? And it is, I just do believe that there is a spiritual stronghold here, and that we need to pray for that. And that stronghold to be broken.
Yeah, that passage out of Ephesians 6 about wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. I think when the satanic enemy is able to create concerted information with government and media and financial interests all saying the same thing, it's very hard to counter it. And that's why the fight across the world for freedom of speech is really, really important. And the thing now is that media, because it's got pictures that are from today, because we are in effect transported to the front line, we're no longer reading about things that happened a week ago because it took that long to get to us, but we are seeing it, which is much more powerful. And so well-crafted propaganda, well, as you've said, and you've illustrated what you've said, it can actually be more weighty than people you've known and loved all your life. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
It is extraordinary.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity back in January to visit the Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp just outside of Krakow, Poland. And it's something I'd wanted to do, since the first time I came to Krakow when my children were young. We had had to reposition a DTS team from Maui to Poland because already things in Ukraine were starting to get heated, and leadership had decided it was best to send them out. And so I'd come to Krakow to do a little debriefing with them, bring some closure to their time with us. They'd spent almost 2 months in Ternopil, and they all desired to go and see Auschwitz. And one of the things that I took away from that horrific place was how important it is to be truth tellers.
Because
the Nazi propaganda and the Nazi, what they began to believe, it started as a little lie.
Yeah.
And I have to believe there wasn't enough people that were able to speak the truth to them. And it grew and it grew. And where were the truth tellers? And it grew until we had to have a world war to bring the rhetoric and what was happening, the awful, horrific things that were happening. And so we are in another season of life, you know, where we need to be truth tellers. And our media needs to be held accountable to be truth tellers. Because look at what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's eerie, the similarities that, again, the media could be used in such a way to brainwash people to not only believe what they're told, but not to be seekers of truth. Okay, this is what they're saying on the news. But where else can I look to confirm this?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, and we need to say too that if you've already given up on the corporate media and you don't have trust there and you're going online for your information, well, every time you go online, you feed your information into an algorithm that keeps giving you the same stuff. So if you are if, as is true in many parts of the Western world, the corporate media is dominated by the left, then you go online for your information, you're going to be dominated by the right. And you've got to go looking for people who have a different perspective and grit your teeth and listen. Sometimes when you listen to the other perspective, it's so frustrating, but it's important because there'll be bits of truth and significance there. All right. This has been very, very helpful. Now I just have one other big question. You're near the border on the Polish side. We hear that a lot of people are beginning to go back. Because their cities now, it looks like the possibility of some of those cities in the central part and the western part are not likely to have any military action against them in the near future. So people are going back home. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, I think that there is less refugees coming over right now. And I know Ukraine just celebrated Easter last weekend. Yeah. So there was many, many, many people going back in to celebrate Easter with their families and in their communities. I don't know. I'm not an expert, you know, on politics and wars. And I keep hoping that this thing would stop right away, but I keep hearing that it's going to be a marathon and not a sprint.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think in the marathon, there will be waves of areas, you know, that will be hit, and there will be waves of refugees that are forced to leave for their lives. And maybe right now we're in a bit of a lull, and maybe right now people are feeling like it's safe to go home to some of the places where that aren't as much of a hot zone. But the reality is that Ukraine is an active war zone, and anything could change at any moment.
Yeah.
And even for my own family, you know, my children now are 14 and 16, and they want to go home. Ukraine is their home. Ukraine is their people. They're here right now, volunteering within the refugee center here in Poland. And you know, for me as their mom, it's hard to imagine bringing my children into a safer area of Ukraine, but where there are still missiles and bombs flying over our city.
Yeah.
And so I think this is something that, that, you know, families all over Ukraine, are having to struggle with, having to come to decisions about. Some people have no decision left because their homes have been ruined. Other people, have other options, but we all have to, but I think all of us, every Ukrainian that I have talked to has a desire to go home and rebuild and restart, when it becomes safe to do so. You know, I'll just say that too. My husband, Ukrainian, he told me some weeks back, he said, for the first time in his life, he feels inspired by his own people.
There's something
about what has happened in this war that has brought the 40 million people of Ukraine together in a way that has inspired the world, in a way that's reminded us of the value of our freedom and the value of our liberties, and that it is something worth fighting for.
Yeah.
And in that place, I pray that my brothers and sisters in Ukraine would seek the source of true freedom, seek the source of true hope, seek the source of true peace. And this is such an opportunity to turn our faces to the Lord.
Indeed. Well said, Sharon. Thank you for being big-hearted and articulate.
Mm-hmm.
We see your heart. We see that you've thought this through a lot. We see you're a biblical Christian thinker. And you can state it clearly. So thank you very, very much. And I want to say to everybody who watches this, I think Sharon's right. I think this is going to go on for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget. Don't quit praying.
Yes.
The grace of God has been all over so many of these people, in spite of the fact that they are suffering great privations and mm-hmm. personal sacrifices and physical difficulties. Yet there's something happening in the spirit that... that is quite inspirational, as Sharon has said about her husband. So keep praying. Don't forget, the new cycle has already left, and let's not let it leave us. Okay. So thanks again, Sharon. Blessings to you and your husband.
My pleasure.
And
my pleasure.
We'll get in touch again.
I would be happy to chat with you anytime.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Sharon. Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye.